Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Colleges and universities across the nation have been forced to do things very differently since the COVID-19 pandemic struck last year. Howard University is no different. And this weekend, the university will see its first in-person commencement since 2019. Even this one will be different. Well, joining me to talk about this and other issues is Howard University President Dr. Wayne Frederick. And if you have any questions or comments, give me a call right now at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You're welcome to tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Dr. Frederick, thanks for joining the conversation.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. Thank you for asking. So this is Mother's Day weekend, traditionally the weekend that Howard University holds its commencement, and yet this one will be different. How so?
Yeah, it will be different in many ways. Obviously, we're not going to have family and friends there, which obviously is an important part of the atmosphere. But having said that, we're one of very few institutions that will have an in-person commencement, and definitely in the city. And so I do think it's important for us to celebrate our grads. So that in and of itself, although it's going to be different, will in and of itself as well be different and I think be special and memorable for the students as well. You know, they've been through a lot of life change over the past year, and this is yet another one.
Hmm. How did you come to the decision to hold a semi-in-person commencement event this year, when, as you just said, so many universities have decided not to do it?
Yeah, you know, we have a large number of students who they're the first in the generation, you know, first generation in college. We have several students who are Pell Grant eligible. So this is a monumental achievement in so many of our families. And when you look at what has happened over the past year, I hope that as a country we've come to recognize how important diversifying so many of these fields are and what Howard University do is so special. And so I thought it was, if there was any window of opportunity for us to celebrate that we should, you know, definitely hold on to that and make the best of it. And so there was a window of opportunity. We had to seek a waiver from the city. They were comfortable with our plan. We've been trying to educate our students about getting vaccinated. And then also the class of 2020 had a completely virtual event last year. So we've also invited those graduates back as well to join us this coming Saturday.
So, and how will that work? You said that all of the students who, or the graduates, I should say, 2020 and 2021, is that a vaccination a requirement?
It's not a requirement. We are continuing to discuss and educate everyone about being vaccinated. We've also offered the 2020 graduates and the 2021 graduates to also come in and get vaccinated by us as well. You know, while they're here, we've offered that opportunity as well. So our process right now at the university is we're looking at vaccination through the lens of trying to educate as many people about it and making sure it's available to them once they are able to make an informed decision.
You're going to have Brian Stevenson as the commencement speaker, the author of the book Just Mercy. And for those who've not read the book but have seen the movie featuring, of course, Jamie Foxx, and it is a great social justice movie book, and he's done so much more. Talk to me about why it is so incredibly important to have his voice at Howard University during the commencement at this time.
Yeah, you know, I think it's timely. We secured him to be the speaker last year to be fully transparent. And at that time that we had to take it down, I went ahead and tried to secure him for this year in advance, and he agreed, knowing fully well again that I thought his message was going to be pertinent, whether it was last year or this year. And so we're really, really happy that he agreed. I think his own personal story and his life's work are absolutely contemporary for the moment that we found ourselves in as a country. And for the young people who are going to go out and be the solutions, I think for him to send them off with that message is going to be absolutely apropos. So I couldn't have been happier. I think we've consistently, over the time that I've been president, tried to get contemporaneous speakers who can speak to the challenges in life and relate it to the students in a way that they can really go out and take up their life's work. So we're very, very excited about having him.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking to Howard University President Dr. Wayne Frederick about commencement 2021, which will also include the class of 2020, and all other things impacting Howard University. If you have a comment, if you have a question, please don't hesitate to give us a call. Again, at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. The next biggest challenge is arguably returning to campus in the fall. What's your plan for that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think it's going to be a big challenge. Our plan is to have in-person instruction in the fall. We will make a decision about whether or not to make vaccines mandatory, recognizing, you know, two things. I want to be balanced in the fact that from a public health point of view, it's extremely important that as many of us get vaccinated in order to get herd immunity. There's no doubt about that. And so we will look at that as well. We have lots of safety measures that we're going to put in place to ensure everyone's safety. And we also have to recognize that we're part of a bigger community. The other universities and colleges in the city have mandatory vaccination requirements for faculty, staff, and students. And so that's something that we have under consideration. We recognize that we have a unique community here at Howard, a community that has reason to mistrust the medical establishment, and with the vaccines being approved under emergency use authorization, we recognize that that might be a concern for some. So what I have been doing is trying to educate our faculty, staff, and students. Yesterday, I was on a call with the women's volleyball team, you know, answering the players' questions and giving them advice, offered for them to reach out to me individually as well. Sometimes people aren't always comfortable, you know, having questions in a posing questions in a public kind of forum. And so we're going to continue that approach of educating, you know, everyone about it. We want everyone to be safe. Coming back is one thing, but we have to insist that everybody comes back in a safe manner. And so that's what we're going to do. We're going to continue along that line. I believe that we've done a good job of putting information out and really encouraging people to take the vaccine. But the key thing is that they can make an informed decision. So we're going to continue with that, Howell, as we go into the fall.
Has infrastructures changed for the university in preparation for bringing students back to the fall? Yeah. What changes might they see compared to pre-pandemic?
Yeah, you know, the obvious changes they'll see is a lot of signage reminding people to stay apart, to maintain their distance. There will be a mandatory check-in for everyone every day via an app that will ask questions about symptoms and about exposure, again, to ensure that everyone is safe. There are things that they will see in some classrooms plexiglass that will keep set up a barrier system. They will also, I think, get an opportunity to see how the different classrooms are set up within coverage spacing. What they won't see, but it's equally as important, is we will have new filters in the HVAC system that are appropriate. And some of those things behind the scene that they won't see as well in terms of the infrastructure are things that we will be working on as well. And then physically, you know, we've done a couple of things while everyone was away. We've renovated the undergraduate library, so that will be fully open. We are renovating Douglas Hall. That will be back open in the fall. And the Blackburn Center has undergone a complete renovation and will be open in the fall as well. So they'll actually see, you know, that work that has been done on several buildings as well.
What about the dorms? Would they be, how do you social distance? I mean, you have roommates. Do you not have roommates? Yeah. Certainly that's a thing that a lot of parents are concerned about.
Yeah, they will have roommates, and I think that's one of the compelling arguments about why people would like to see, you know, everyone having the vaccine if they're going to come back, because you have to depend on each other. As you know, some of our residence halls have shared spaces, whether it's restrooms, showers, et cetera. And so one way to really make sure that everybody is safe is to have them get vaccinated. And so that's something, again, like I said, we have to discuss. I want to keep a balanced discussion about it. Like I said, recognizing some people's apprehension, but we also have to do what we think is in the better, you know, public health common good. And so we'll certainly be thoughtful about that as well.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking to Howard University President Dr. Wayne Frederick about Howard University commencement this week, returning in the fall, and navigating the COVID-19 pandemic, which is still with us. If you have a question, if you have a comment, give us a call. We'd be interested in hearing what you have to say. One of the other things, homecoming. There was no homecoming last year, and it was difficult to see that.
No doubt about it. Yeah. No doubt about it. And I know that this is something that's always going to be on everybody's mind. We will see what the public health situation is, especially CDC guidance with respect to the number of people that can gather. I think it's important that, you know, we're going to have to follow those rules and take that guidance. And once we have that guidance, we'll be able to make a determination as to whether or not it is safe and prudent for us to go ahead and have homecoming. Mm-hmm.
What have you heard from parents? Because I'm sure that they've been ringing your phone. They've been hitting your social media account. What is their biggest concern?
You know, I think lots of parents want their students back in the classroom. We recognize that this is not only about the education that they get. I think we've done a good job of providing the education, you know, in a virtual setting. And so kudos to the faculty and staff who played an instrumental role in doing that. However, when you come to Howard, I think lots of us recognize that social engagement is also a major part of, you know, what students get. And so what I'm hearing from parents is they'd like in-person. Now, how that is set up, that's where you start getting, you know, a diversion of views. There are clearly parents who want their students back, and they want everyone around them to be vaccinated. They want that to be mandated. But I think university, the vast majority of parents, almost 100%, want their students back. I would say that the majority would also want everybody around their students to be vaccinated. And there are some who may have some concerns about the vaccine and would, you know, like us to employ a very heavy testing schedule, but the public health data does suggest that the safest way to go would be to have everybody vaccinated so that we have herd immunity on campus. And being in a bigger city where the mayor has really pushed out the vaccine to the Department of Health and, like I said, the other schools and colleges in the city will have their populations fully vaccinated. We have to recognize that we're part of a bigger ecosystem, and so we have to support that ecosystem in some way. At some point in the very near future, we'll get to a conclusion as to how we can support the mayor and the public health system in DC, and we'll put out an announcement that reflects that. But the parents definitely want their students, their kids back in school.
You are a physician as well as the university president. What have you learned specifically as it relates to managing the university in the midst of this pandemic about the pandemic?
Yeah, I would say, about the pandemic, I would say that the interconnectedness of us all was something that I think the pandemic revealed. I wouldn't say so much what I learned, but what got reinforced to me is really just how special Howard's campus is and its community in terms of, how we've rallied around the community, whether it's standing up testing or the distribution of the vaccine, to see students from the Nursing Allied Health School, from pharmacy, dentistry and medicine, not just students, but faculty and staff volunteering to vaccinate the public was heartwarming. So it was more a reaffirmation of the special nature of the Howard community and its connection and love for that community. And, I think reinforcing that was important. It also, I think, underscored the importance of a Howard University and why it's critical that Howard University is thriving in producing leaders that can go out and make the changes, but also providing services that help our community, stay safer, be healthier, et cetera. And so it's been, while this has been a tragedy to see so many people get sick and die, the silver lining has been seeing Howard's mission come alive.
I want to talk a little bit more about that after I take a really short break. We want to remind our listeners that the Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. The original Quiet Storm with John Mons is next on WHUR. This conversation continues in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking with Howard University President Dr. Wayne Frederick about all things Howard University. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Dr. Frederick, piggybacking on the point that we were making before the break, I was thinking about medical students, nursing students, and the impact of the pandemic on their education. I would think that it was the best analogy is it's one thing for a soldier to go through basic training. It's another thing to send them into a war. And this seems to be one of the most difficult, challenging, and yet at the same time, the perfect kind of storm for students in the medical field to be at Howard University. And I'm sure that you have had a chance to talk to them over the past year. What have you seen and what have they said about this educational experience at this critical time?
Yeah, it's a very great point, and I have been operating during the pandemic, making rounds. So I have been really spending a lot of time with the students and seeing them. I've been to the vaccination center on a couple of occasions as well and engaged, you know, students there. And what first thing I would say is it reminds me of being a young medical student in 1990, around the time of the AIDS epidemic, and having to kind of traverse that entire epidemic and how much we didn't know, how much anxiety there was, and how protecting yourself was just as important as taking care of patients. And here we are today, you know, a few decades, three decades removed from that experience, to the students going through this experience. And so I've spoken to them a lot about that, a lot about what I felt as a medical student and listened to them in terms of what they felt. And I have to tell you, they have really approached this in an unbelievable fashion. They have been good stewards of the integrity of what must be done to keep each other safe. So they've really interacted with one another and been good accountability buddies to one another. At one point when we were still going through all of the things that we needed to, as people were coming in to the hospital, they would check, they would, you know, check on their classmates. They had a station at the entrances to the hospital and they would check their temperatures and so on. I mean, this really, really very positive approach, you know, to what was taking place. And again, for that, I'm very, very thankful that the students had that mature approach to what, quite honestly, was a very complicated and difficult situation, but they did it well. And now that they actively are taking care of these patients, they're really doing a fantastic job. And I have been very proud of how they have stepped up and stepped in. And I think really made an incredible mark, to be quite honest.
Has anything surprised you about the you know, the process as we have moved through what appears to be the worst of the pandemic and into the vaccine stage?
Yeah, you know, I think the inequities and the fact that people are acting as if the inequities are new or they are surprised by them, I would be honest, has been disappointing. Because I think the reality is we all know that this has been the case for some time. And I think to even act or to suggest some surprise is disappointing. You know, I think it throws for the salt in the wound because the reality is that this has been around and people needed to deal with it. And having said that, you know, fortunately, there is an effort being made to deal with it finally. And hopefully that's an effort that would win out over time.
And your thoughts about vaccine hesitancy? Governmental agencies have been really pushing to get people vaccinated, from the White House all the way down to, you know, local governments. Prince George's County announcing, for example, today that they've started this program going door to door, hanging doorknob cards, trying to get people to change their minds. The state of Maryland now doing this mobile vaccination bus going to nursing homes. We are seeing more availability now of the vaccine, the availability outweighing the demand. And yet there are people who say, you know, absolutely not, particularly people of color, We've spoken to them on our program literally within the past few days. People who are saying they're still waiting, they're still watching, they're still dealing with the misinformation, disinformation, conspiracy theories, and I could go on and on and on. How do you combat that?
My approach has been probably a little bit different. My first approach is to listen and to make sure that we really are hearing people so that we can meet them where they are. I believe that their concerns are legitimate. I believe that some of what has happened in the past, some of what they've experienced is legitimate. And this is not just about the medical establishment. It is about our society at large. The African-American community's distrust in our governmental agencies is well warranted, right? So it's not just about the medical establishment, because you have to remember, when you hear the FDA and the CDC and NIH are involved in a vaccine process, people also associate that with law enforcement and the Congress and all of these things that right now the African-American community has reason to believe hasn't supported them well. Having said that, once we do listen to them and we display that empathy, we then have to make sure that we're willing to engage in a transparent discussion about what has occurred and why they got here, and to separate some of their misinformation, or as you described, disinformation, from reality. And once we do that, we then have to educate them about what the facts are surrounding this process and how it works. It requires patience. And I think in our anxiety to get people to get the vaccine, I think we are bypassing a bit of that. I think we are making an attempt to just run by the discussion of what and why, and just trying to get on to you kind of have to do this. And I think that that's a mistake, I have to be honest. And it does require a lot of patience. And it doesn't require, the other thing we have to be willing to do is to recognize that this may not only be a one-off conversation. It may be multiple conversations. So we have to be willing to come back to the same people as well. You know, as you just mentioned, the Prince George's County effort to go door-to-door, I think, is admirable. But I also hope that people would recognize they've got to come back and go back to some of those doors more than once, and be willing every time to be patient in listening, and then be patient and then trying to progress the conversation to the right place. So it's extremely important. I think people have to be respected. Their views have to be respected and not dismissed.
Mm. What do you think can convince those who are on the fence?
I think we have to use trusted messengers. So you have to use institutions like Howard University, trusted messenger in the community. I think you have to use other trusted messengers like neighbors in the community, elders, church leaders. You have to employ trusted messengers. I think we have to be patient. As I said before, I think if people see that they're not being forced or coerced, but rather we're meeting them where they are and willing to have a conversation about their doubt and skepticism and respecting that it is legitimate, I think you have a greater chance of convincing that person down the road. But our approach, really has to be one that embraces patience to get us there. And I think if we do that in earnest and we stick to the task at hand, we will get to a point of being able to convert some people who have significant skepticism right now, we'd be able to convert them.
I want to ask you about one of the issues that was in the news recently. This now has to do with HBCUs. The NFL draft was held last week, and not one player drafted, had attended an HBCU. What's going on there?
Yeah, you know, the power structure in college athletics continues to reward the Power Five, and that's just a reality. And so we have to continue to watch that closely. You know, do HBCU candidates get the kind of exposure that they would need and require in order for teams to give them a look? So, you know, I think it's a legitimate issue in terms of are the athletes getting the right exposure? So that's one. Are the NFL coaches willing to come and look at HBCU players? Because I'm not convinced that you can do this those many rounds in a draft and not find a few players at HBCU that are worthy. But again, it's about where do you go for your attention? And it affects many fields, right? So athletics is one, but what happens at the med school level? Howard University sends more African-Americans to med school than anyone else. Why is that? Do we have some type of monopoly on the talent base? Probably not. But we're committed to those students, and so we're able to send them there. The reality is some of these other institutions may not be looking at them as options, and I think that that's wrong. And I think we have to call that out when we see it. I think we have to make an issue of it, so that it doesn't happen again, but it's not going to go away, right? Like I said, there's the power dynamic within college athletics has skewed the field significantly, and we have to be realistic about that.
Dr. Frederick, I'm going to take a break, and when we come back, I'm going to talk about some other things. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about Howard University and some other issues as well with Howard University President Dr. Wayne Frederick. Stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
When the doctor told us about my mom's cancer, it made me feel so helpless. Until I called the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society and spoke with Grace, who answered all of my questions about the disease, treatment options, and cancer-related expenses. Her support and compassion made us feel whole again. Today, I'm calling Grace to let her know my mom is beating cancer. To learn more, visit lls.org.
I'm getting vaccinated to be an example to my community.
I'm getting vaccinated for my mom.
I'm getting vaccinated because we all need to do our part.
I'm getting vaccinated for my mom and dad.
I'm getting vaccinated in honor of those who have lost their lives to this pandemic.
During this pandemic, Howard University and Howard University Hospital have been on the front lines to support our community and the Black community at large. Now you can help us by doing your part. Wear a mask, keep your social distance, wash your hands, and when your time comes, get a vaccine. The vaccines that are coming to market have proven to be safe and more than 90% effective. However, we can't get to the other side of this pandemic without you. Over the next several months, we need more than 80% of the US population to take the vaccine so that it can be effective. I'm getting vaccinated for you.
It's Weekend with Ed Gordon. We give you your favorite stars.
Charlie Wilson.
R&B was suffering for a long time because of hip-hop.
Kevin Hart.
I don't care what side you are, how tough you are. You love to be around the people that's going to make you laugh.
Stephanie Mills.
Just like in Whitney's case, how can you have all those people around you and you die?
We get involved.
If we want a good Black history lesson, we should probably not go to Quentin Tarantino.
And we're jammed.
Hey, it's Ed Gordon. Join me Sunday nights at 9 on Sirius Channel 141.
Hi, I'm Dr. Nia Heard-Garris with today's tip for kids from the American Academy of Pediatrics. Babies younger than 6 months don't sleep for very long at a time, which means their parents don't either. But with practice, babies can get into a safe sleep routine. Remember, the safest place for your baby to sleep for every nap and every sleep is on their back in a bassinet, crib, or play yard. Knowing your baby is safe should help you sleep more soundly. For more on safe sleep, talk with your pediatrician or visit healthychildren.org.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, this is a world premiere.
Go-Go is now on SiriusXM. It's Crank Radio with Shorty Corleone
and Rico Anderson.
Saturdays and Sundays,
9 to 10.
Channel 141.
HUR Voices.
Check in
and check out the Crank.
Let's Go-Go.
All you want to know about Go-Go is right here on Crank Radio.
There's no party like a Crank Radio party, because a Crank Radio party don't stop.
You can always come up with an excuse for not visiting longtermcare.gov.
Oh, I forgot. Game night.
After all, who wants to admit that one day they will be, you know, old?
Hey, do you see any crow's feet on this face? I don't.
But since 70% of older Americans need some kind of long-term care, why not do some free planning now so you can stay in charge? Visit longtermcare.gov and find your own path forward.
Hi, I'm Craig Morgan. You might know me for my songs, but before I sang country music, I served in the United States Army, where I stood side by side with some of the most resilient people I've ever met. They taught me that one small act can make a big difference during tough times. If you're a veteran or service member in crisis or having thoughts of suicide, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. One conversation can save a life. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 or visit veteranscrisisline.net.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM, channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. We continue our conversation with Howard University President Dr. Wayne Frederick. Dr. Frederick, piggybacking on this sports issue, you have recently been appointed with new membership with the Knight Commission on Intercollegiate Athletics. Talk to me, first of all, about, for those who aren't familiar, what the Knight Commission is and what your role will be going forward.
Yeah, the Knight Commission on Intercollegiate Athletics was established back in 1989 by the John and James Knight Foundation. And the goal here was to really take a good look at intercollegiate athletics. It followed a series of kind of highly visible scandals in intercollegiate athletics. It was initially co-chaired by William Friday and Reverend Hesburgh, who was the president at Notre Dame at the time. And a lot of their recommendations actually have been adopted over time by the NCAA and really led to significant reforms. So I have recently been, the announcement went out today, but I recently was appointed to the commission, and look forward to the work. I mean, right now you have things like name, image, likeness on the horizon, an issue which may determine whether or not athletes get paid, as an example, while they're in college, and not necessarily paid by colleges, but their ability to profit off of their own likeness and image, et cetera. So there's a lot to be discussed, and I look forward to, you know, joining and listening and trying to contribute and bring in what I think would be a different perspective. I'm not sure how many HBCU presidents, if any, have served in this role before, so it certainly gives me an opportunity to bring a different perspective.
In addition to your perspective, beyond, you know, these kinds of discussions, what kind of teeth does the commission have? What kind of influence does it have on our collegiate sports?
It has a significant, I mean, a lot of reforms that have occurred have come out today, and the types of people they have on the commission has really ensured that, you know, people throughout the country really stop and listen and take heed. Because they do a lot of good research, and I think it's a very thoughtful deliberation that leads to the outcomes. The current co-chairs are Dr. Zimfer, the Chancellor Emeritus at SUNY, Len Elmore, who many of us know from University of Maryland, basketball player, and the former Secretary of Education, Andy Duncan. So it's a really strong group of, I think, very, very thoughtful people. And like I said, I look forward to, you know, contributing in the work and really making sure that I can advance the reforms that must take place in intercollegiate athletics as we move forward.
Well, I will say, in looking at the members, and as you mentioned, you don't know whether or not any previous HBCU presidents have participated, but you are the only HBCU president in this 22-member group. And so it would appear to me that the influence that you have will hold a great deal of sway as it relates to, you know, the many discussions that will face this group. So you know, we certainly salute you in that regard. I wanted to talk to you about one of the other issues that has popped up. I'm sure that you watched the president's address to the joint Congress, the joint session of Congress last week, and South Carolina Senator Tim Scott saying that America is not a racist country, Vice President Kamala Harris clapping back at him and going into great detail about that. How do you, as the president of an HBCU, address this very issue where our history is now, and whether it's the George Floyd situation, whether it is, you know, some of the horrific things that we're seeing coming out of North Carolina and, you know, Virginia, and all of these discussions, you know, does it give you, you know, pause for redirecting that conversation and your thoughts? How do you address that?
No, you know, listen, this is a complicated issue. And I say complicated because one of the things that we must not lose sight of, and I think it's about perspective. Yes, I hear Senator Scott, the country has made progress in several different areas, but that progress has not come without a price. And that progress is not enough and has not moved us far along enough. We are still suffering indignities today as Black people living in America that are unacceptable. And so that cannot, the burden of that cannot be completely ignored. You know, and so I think sometimes in these things, you can get into a situation where people end up speaking past each other. So, you know, to Senator Scott's point, has there been progress? Absolutely. I mean, I think it would be flying in the face of our civil rights leaders who have gone before us, whether it's a John Lewis or a Vernon Jordan, two men who have recently passed, who have struggled to move the country from where it has been along. They have fought a good fight, and as a result of their fight, have made progress. There's no doubt about that. Now, having said that, is there a lot more to do? Absolutely. Are there significant racist elements in this country that have, especially over the past 4 to 5 years, reared their head more aggressively? They've always been within the fabric of our society, but have they taken a more prominent positioning? Absolutely. And so there has to be, I think, measured celebration about the progress. But we have to also acknowledge that there's a lot of work left to be done, and we have to be about that work. And if we don't acknowledge that there's a problem, we will not go about that work in the right way.
Are you at all concerned about the apparent divisions in the country as it relates to race? I mean, at Howard, Howard University, you know, the Mecca. I will say, you know, those conversations in my family came from my father, for example, among others, who went to Howard. If it were not for Howard University and the kind of education about Black people, I would not have the same kind of thought process through him that I have today. And as I said, our history is now. and the country seems to be split down the middle.
Yeah, I'm certainly concerned, but Howell, I think we're split in so many different ways. The difference between the haves and the have-nots economically, our income inequality has exploded. The inequality between by gender in the workplace, black women earning significantly less than white women, white men, and even black men. There's so many fault lines right now that it is all concerning. Having said that, though, I think the reason Howard University was started and the fulfillment of that vision and mission for which it was started, is I think what must give us hope. And we must continue to press forward with that hope in the young people. And so Saturday at our commencement, one of the reasons I'm so filled with excitement about that celebration is because we're actually sending out the solution to that division that exists in our country. We're sending out young people that are going to be willing to have the difficult conversation and to bring their peers to the table to have the right conversation and also put policies and laws on the books that will move America closer to fulfilling its promises. And I think that that is something to still be celebrated. So while the division is daunting, the fault lines are drawn, I think the conveners, the connectors, and the solution providers that Howard University will release into the world on Saturday gives me great hope.
Well, we all will be looking forward to that this Saturday, Dr. Frederick. And even though it'll be without family and friends, we certainly believe that it will be a great Mother's Day for the parents of those graduates. Very, very big deal. Dr. Wayne Frederick, Howard University President, thank you so much for talking to us. I appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, May 4th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now you can stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night.